Thank you, Cheryl. So good evening. It's very lovely to be here as always. On May Day, I totally forgot it was May Day. It's May Day in Europe. I know we don't really celebrate it here, but May the 1st is May Day. And so we're going to be looking at verse 9 of the Tao Te Ching this evening. Oh, happy birthday to your father, Cheryl. Mine is May 17th and my father's is May 16th, so all Taurians. We're going to, sorry, yeah, looking at verse 9 of the Tao Te Ching this evening. But before we start, we'll just have a centering so that we can be in the right frame of mind to receive or listen, should I say, well, this evening. So we're just going to close the eyes, unless you're driving. Definitely don't close the eyes. We're going to close the eyes and relax the shoulders and the tailbone. And see if we can place both feet on the ground. In Taoism, it's said that we receive through the heels. So you breathe in through the heels, but you also are able to receive or listen or be in a more contemplative state of mind when both of our feet are on the ground, which is different, of course, to other practices where your legs are crossed. So just settling into this position, whatever that is for you, and just observing where you are. And noticing if there are thoughts that you're getting drawn away into, whether the awareness is following the thoughts, and see if you can bring the awareness back just to the breath, observing the breath in the body. Or maybe listening to the silence or the birds. And then seeing if you can move your awareness up over the skull and down, and feeling sort of dropping down like a pebble into a pool at the level of the heart. So if that sounds a bit weird, sort of see if you can feel your way into your heart center. And then from this expansive place, we're going to make an offering of our time together this evening. So just silently offering up our time together for the benefit of all beings. May all beings be happy. May all beings be at peace. And then taking a deep inhale through the heels, all the way up, and exhaling. Okay, so yeah, as I mentioned, we're looking at chapter or verse, sorry, verse 9. I never know whether verse or chapter of the Tao Te Ching, and it's a short one, so we'll see how far we get with it. There are a lot of readings that I could share with you this evening, so maybe we'll do that if we run out of things to say about it. So if you Google anywhere online, and you'll come across the full Tao Te Ching for free and in numerous translations, but I'm going to be just reading a couple, one from Stephen Mitchell and then one from Salala Towler, so you can just see the slight nuances. Fill your bowl to the brim and it will spill. Keep sharpening your knife and it will blunt. Chase after money and security and your heart will never unclench. Care about people's approval and you will be their prisoner. Do your work, then step back, the only path to serenity. So that was Stephen Mitchell's, and Salala Towler's is very similar. Overfilling a vessel is not as good as stopping before it is filled. Oversharpen a blade and it will lose its edge. Pile up gold and jade and it will be impossible to guard it. In going after rank and title in an arrogant and haughty way, you bring about your own downfall. Withdraw when the work is done. This is the way of the Tao. So I don't know if you got this from today's, but my takeaway is that this particular verse is talking about knowing when enough is enough. Finding that place of balance, of not overdoing anything, of not overacting, overspeaking, overeating, but just allowing yourself to be guided into a place of just enough. So we've talked about this before. The Tao Te Ching is very much, it was a shamanic path that inspired the Tao Te Ching, or certainly at the time the Tao Te Ching was written, it was, the teachings were what we would now call shamanic. They were very much based on observing nature, working with alchemy within nature, working with spirits. And Taoism today is also, it's quite removed from the Tao Te Ching, because the Tao Te Ching is more just sort of these phrases and things to contemplate rather than a list of things to do or practices to do, which is more like Taoism today. Is there's a lot of ritual and it's more like a religion, I guess. But even now, the sort of shamanic elements and this sort of alchemical, magical elements of Taoism, and it's very much about sort of spirits and earth and heavens. There are many heavens in Taoism. But I mention this because when we look at the Tao Te Ching, often we're learning from the nature around us. And if you think, you know, this was written like 60, I don't know, like 2000 odd years ago, perhaps they think it was written maybe a little before. Hey Jay, good evening. So if you can imagine, you know, there wasn't concrete at that time and our human life was spent much more with nature, and nature would be seen as very much a teacher for us. You know, today we sort of seem to think that we are the guardians of nature and nature's there to provide us with something. But back when the Tao Te Ching was written, it was very much that nature is spirit and that we learn from it. And of course we would treat it well and we are guardians of it, but not in the sense of we are more superior to nature, which is sometimes where we get today. But anyway, one thing to observe when we're trying to learn or contemplate this teaching about when is enough enough is through observing nature. So for example, and Wayne Dyer points this out in his contemplation of this particular verse, and he says, "The Tao has the capability to generate everything in amounts that would stupefy an observer, yet its gentle humility seems to know when there are enough trees, flowers, bees, hippos, and every other living thing. Excess is eschewed by the Tao. It doesn't need to show off its unlimited capacity for creating. It knows exactly when to stop." This verse invites us to be in spiritual rapport with this characteristic of the Tao. It really just sort of invites us to be more with our natural state and to follow the way of nature. And whether you take that to be nature as in life, you know, trees and birds, or nature as in just the essence of yourself, just to be in line with that. And so I was thinking about this and thinking, you know, you don't, maybe you, some dogs I know will overeat and make themselves sick. My one isn't like that, but I know some of my friends have dogs like that. But generally, more wild animals, you don't see them gorge themselves. They know when enough is enough. For example, you don't see bees just going around and covering themselves in pollen until they can no longer fly because they'd be so heavy. They understand when enough is enough. And Jay says, yes, the Labrador will do that. Yes, a lab probably will eat itself sick. It does not know the way of the Tao. But generally speaking, you know, birds will take what they need, animals will take what they need, trees will take enough moisture, just what they need, and they give out what they no longer need. They don't give out more. And Wayne Dyer also makes this point here about having a baby, which I thought was really funny. He says, where is it? Hang on a minute. Sorry, I'm just looking for this. Here we go. He says, ego wants you to gather more and more rewards for your actions. But if you're in a state of loving appreciation in each of your present moments, then you're letting go of the absurd idea that you're here to accumulate rewards. Seek the pleasure in what you're doing rather than in how it might ultimately benefit you. Begin to trust in that infinite wisdom that birthed you into this material world. After all, it knew the exact timing of your arrival. It didn't say, if 9 months will create such a beautiful baby, I'll extend the gestation period to 5 years. Now we'll even have an even more perfect creation. Nope, the Tao says 9 months is fine. That's what you get, and you don't need any more time. So that kind of made me laugh because I thought, you know, if humans could, because of the nature of our minds, we would try and extend the gestation period in if we thought that it was going to create some sort of more perfect baby. And and that's one of those things that, you know, you just have to fall in line with nature and do what your body's doing. Same with aging, you know, so many of us are, I say us humans are attempting not to age, but it's just inevitable. And when we go against it, we see all sorts of horror stories of those who are trying to go against their nature. And Jay points out we probably wouldn't have children if it took 5 years. That's true. Probably not. But generally, yes, this verse seems to be about, to me, certainly this is what I got from it, that to observe nature and to notice that nature never takes more than it needs. And it's a sort of reminder to us to not push more than we need to, but to find this balance, this enough is enough. And Satala points out that this isn't just about the material world. Excuse me, I'm sipping on a tea. But he also points out it is sort of a metaphor as well, if you want to say that. So he says, it refers to experiences like emotions and thoughts and complaints and desires, which in themselves aren't problems until they swell to exceed our capacity to deal with them. So over-sharpening a blade can refer to overthinking. And we spend a lot of time trying to sharpen our minds as if we're going to cut through problems. But a mind that is over-sharpened will easily lose its edge and end up worthless. And why is it worthless? Because it's overthinking, it's over-analyzing, and it's not just being in tune with its nature. And the tighter our hold is on gold and jade, this mentioning of money and security or wealth and happiness, the more we become subject to thieves. And so in the verse I just read, it said, pile up gold and jade, and it will be impossible to guard it. But if we think about, if we're trying to pile up wealth and abundance and happiness, in the end, we will become subject to thieves, which will be negative thoughts, emotions, desires, and destructive activity in our efforts to defend and obtain. And that means, you know, I think most of us can, or resonate with times in our lives where we've been so happy that we just thought, I must hold on to this happiness. I absolutely must guard against it. And, or we've thought, you know, I don't want to do this because it will bring me down. And I don't want to do this because it will bring me down. And in that way, we're then adding the mind and putting up walls around us to defend against these thieves, such as negative thoughts, emotions, desires, and destructive activities, then starts to come in. Because you know we're not acting from our nature and allowing things to go with the flow, all of a sudden we are trying to defend. So maybe we'll, you know, not hang out with old friends because we seem to think they will bring us down. And that would be perhaps, it's a judgment for one, and maybe we need to be there for that friend at the time. So we're sort of starting to bring the mind in and therefore moving away from our nature. So he says this advice is just not taking anything to an extreme. We think if we're doing well in one way, we can carry it to an extreme and surely do even better. This pushing and pushing and pushing that we often find ourselves doing, but often the opposite happens and a mess results. So I was thinking, like, what is the outcome generally when we are doing this pushing and pushing? What is the outcome? And the way it manifests for me, and so I'm just assuming it manifests this way for most people, is just exhaustion and tiredness. And if you want to look at it from an energetic standpoint, depleted energy. So if we move with the Tao, we have full energy. We can, sleep 6 or 7 hours a night, whatever it is, and we can eat small amounts, and but we can still, be healthy and active. It's sort of said in Taoism that when you move away from the Tao, you get very tired, whichever way you're moving. To one side of the pendulum swing or to the other side, you begin to get very tired because your energy depletes, right? And it's the Tao, that when you're in line with the Tao and the flow, that's what gives you your life energy. So, for example, I was thinking about children. If you ever watch children who get really, really upset about something and their emotions go berserk, like maybe they start off and they're upset, but they aren't able to soothe themselves, or they can't find solace from or comfort from whatever you say to them, they will get more and more and more into their emotion to have a screaming fit. And eventually, sometimes, will just fall asleep afterwards because they're so tired from this excess of emotion. And other things I was thinking about was, food. If we eat more than we need to in food, we've all been there. We'll just, we won't split a dessert, we'll get our own. And sure enough, afterwards, we feel like just taking a nap. We're so tired, we definitely don't want to run a marathon. And there are a couple of things that happened this week that I was thinking about for me, or have happened the last couple of weeks. One is just, is the TV. I'm quite sensitive to how much TV I watch, and I generally don't watch much TV, but my partner Bill, he likes a bit of TV. So we often will pick like a series that we'll watch together over several months. And we've been working our way through the West Wing for months and months and months. We might do a couple of episodes every couple of nights or something like that. But this weekend we are getting to the end. We are nearing the end. It's the final season. Don't tell me what happens. And because I can feel it coming, and I just want it over with, really, it's just the way I am. I just want to close that chapter of months and months. I know it's an old, and I've never seen it, The West Wing, but we started watching it as, things were hotting up in the primaries, and kind of got hooked. And now I watch it for comfort because it makes me feel good about politics. But anyway, I think we watched like four episodes yesterday, and then I knew that it was beginning to be excessive, that I really just needed to say enough was enough. But I didn't, because it was like 5 p.m. So, there are a few hours left till bedtime. And we went on and watched, maybe 8 episodes yesterday. And I knew this was really bad for me, and I felt wired, but not in a good way, like a wired tired. And I woke up about 3 in the morning having a dream about characters from West Wing. And then I lay there, and all I could hear was the mind going over and over the things in the episodes, and it was, I just observed it, but it was just a classic, when you know enough is enough, but you ignore it. And then recently I did something similar with a work project. So I guess, sorry, the outcome of that was I was exhausted and did not sleep well. So that's one outcome. But the other was, for the past few weeks, I had this idea that came to me. It was an inspiration, and we'll talk a bit about inspiration later, to do a project for Earth Day. And I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but to do a project for Earth Day of collecting videos of people talking about what they would miss about Earth. And I was really excited when this idea came to me, and went to one of my bosses. I do a lot of freelance work, and suggested that I do this project. Had a little bit of pushback. So already at the beginning, I was pushing, and I knew this. And so already my sort of awareness was like, you better watch what's going on here because you can feel yourself pushing. And he eventually okayed me to do it. And it was really challenging. And I had to collect videos, and people didn't want to submit videos, and I wasn't getting much support from the company on social media. And I could just feel myself really, really pushing more and more and more. And I was working maybe 10-hour days on a job really that pays me only to do 1 hour a day. So everything else went out the window. I slept really badly. I had no time for friends for a period of 3 weeks. And it was one of those things that you're working the night, and I'm brainstorming in the middle of the night for more and more ideas. So eventually, it came to Earth Day, and the video played, and I just had no joy in watching this creation at all. And at the beginning, that initial inspiration that was so full of joy and energy had really just depleted me by the end, because I hadn't known when to just say, let's just leave it be, or this work is enough, or I've done enough hours for today, or it doesn't have to be perfect. That's the other thing. And I think we're all prone to do that. But what's interesting is that we can hear it. We can feel our body is getting a bit out of whack, or we hear a voice saying, you're trying too hard, or you're pushing too hard, but we often ignore that voice. And so I was thinking about, well, why do we do that? Why do we have the extra slice of cake? Why do we, or the fourth glass of wine, or why do we push ourselves so hard at work? Why do we run an extra mile and then injure ourselves? What is that all about? And obviously, there are several reasons, such as not believing you're worthy enough, so seeking approval in your own mind, approval of yourself might be one. For example, if you're pushing yourself too hard at the gym. But then, as the Tao says here, care about other people's approval and you will be their prisoner, meaning you are really having your life dictated to by other people instead of just following your own natural flow. One of the other reasons is just not trusting. And this is probably the biggest reason that we push and overpush, is that we just don't trust that everything will be okay. And even if it's not okay, it's still okay. So in example of the work project, maybe it wouldn't have been the best video in the world if I'd only got 10 people to take part instead of 80. But to be honest, it only got like 1,000 hits anyway. So even if it may have got 500 with just 10 people, and I'd have had worked, 90% less, which would have been much, much more joyful for me, So one thing I came across this week, my professor mentioned to me the word doubt and the origin of the word doubt. And in German, the word doubt is Zweifel. I'll just type that in case it triggers anything for anyone. Maybe when you see it, if you know German numbers, this might ring a bell. So Zweifel is doubt. And what doubt literally means in German is having two minds, and being between these two minds, sort of in the in-between of being, it's a bit nuanced, but having these two minds, being between the two minds, it comes back to duality. It's Zweifel really means like dual. If your mind is Zweifel, your mind is in duality. So when we're thinking about, we do these things because we don't trust and therefore we doubt. And in that moment, what Zweifel sort of reminded me was that in that moment that we don't trust, we move into the world of, we are firmly in duality. We are not coming from this one mind. We're not coming from one spirit in that moment. And whether you call it one mind, one spirit, or God, it's essentially the same as the Tao of being in the flow of allowing something to move through you and being in the movement of that oneness that flows through everything and is moving everything. Because we have moved into this state of two-mindedness and therefore are not trusting. I mean, the ego has to doubt. It can't do anything other than doubt because it is in duality. So we can't expect the ego not to, to all of a sudden start trusting. It's only through sort of practice and moving into right-mindedness and slowing down and contemplating and self-observation that we begin to be able to tune in to the Tao and allow ourselves to be moved. So I thought that was really helpful in thinking about in that moment where maybe we manage to catch ourselves, where we're opting for the dessert when we're already full, or the second helping of chicken wings, I don't know, or taking on more work than we need, even though like a voice says to us, this is a little too much right now. We know in our heart, and we ignore it. Then I felt like this word Zweifel is really helpful to think, ah, I am not trusting this inner voice, and I'm moving into two-mindedness when I do this. And so I can just come back in to this one-mindedness and take a breath and ask within whether I need the extra slice or the extra workload or another episode of West Wing. And on that point, Jay, yes, Westworld, I binged watched over a whole week. And again, it gave me nightmares and stuff like that. So I know these things aren't good for me. But there is something I'm just not trusting that inner voice I'm preferring, or I'm choosing to listen to the doubting mind rather than going within. So, in terms of practices of how we move into this place where we can hear more the inner voice that tells us when enough is enough, so that we don't deplete our energy and that we can stay with an open heart and not cause negative emotions or negative thoughts to negative karma, if you want to look at it that way, to kick off. It's really practicing listening within. And there are so many ways in which to do that. Obviously, meditation, being still. One thing I was reading earlier was recommending that you just start factoring today more moments of silence. So when you pull up at your door in your car or at your workplace and turn the key off in your engine or whatever it is you do with your car, press a button, I don't know, that you just give yourself a minute of complete silence. The radio's off. And just a couple of times a day, whenever you're in your car and when you pull up somewhere, take that minute to just be in silence and just listen within. Another one was to listen to nature all around you. But I'm just going to grab the book and just read it through. It's called Practicing the Sacred Art of Listening. It's a really lovely book. But she mentions a few things that you can do to really just start to tune into this voice inside. Because most of us, I do think, hear it, but we tend to ignore it. But I guess the more we do hear it, the more we will listen to it. So listen for the birds, she says. Notice how many different sounds there are. You may not hear anything at first. It takes time for the brain to slow down enough to hear them. Create a ritual to remind you to listen. So write yourself a note with the word listen on. Listen for the small sounds, cat purring, people breathing, leaves rustling. These are the sounds that train us to find the wisdom in silence. She says, go for a walk. Be mindful of every step. Notice everything that catches your eye. Breathe in the scent of a flower or the air of the ocean, the richness of the earth, connecting yourself to nature. Again, a lot of these things are just provided for by nature. And I noticed that when I started going birding, within a day of birding, now I am attuned to bird call. I can't tell you what bird they are, but I hear the different types of bird call, and I can hear them and then find them with my eyes. I can often hear a sound now and look in a tree and know exactly where in the tree I'm going to be looking for a bird, which is phenomenal because I'll tell you, I'm kind of deaf. So it's got nothing to do with my hearing, but you just become more sensitive once you start practicing and opening yourselves up. And we all know this because, you know, once you start focusing on the sound of a neighbor or your partner snoring at night, you once it's in there, you can never, it sort of becomes frustrating and you can never let it go. So we know that when we can start to tune into sounds and start to listen to sounds more deeply, and we just, once you practice doing the outside as without, so within, you can just learn to listen more deeply within. Let's see if there's anything else she mentioned. She had some really good ideas in this book. Look. Anyway, okay, I'll just let that go for now. And then Salada Tala had a few tips. Now, he's a hardcore Taoist, so these were sort of more practical, you'll get what I'm saying. He says, eat only until you're 80% full. Dance, sing, don't sit too long. Take time to dream. In hot weather, do not exert yourself. In cold weather, do not become chilled. Try fasting once a week. You'll be amazed how much energy you have as your digestive system starts to rest. So here's a sort of more practical, not really ways for listening inside, but practicing not having excess when learning when enough is enough. So one of the other practices is observing, so self-observation, so just sitting with yourself and noticing when you want to do more than maybe is necessary, just observing in that moment, so moving into awareness, watching awareness and looking at what that pull is, what is that desire. And journaling about it, or just resting in self-observation. So Red Hawk, who I know I've talked about before, he has some really lovely books, and one of them is called Self-Observation, and it talks about this idea of non-doing. So we've talked about Wu Wei before, and we're going to talk about it again in a little bit, but really what this comes down to, this idea of enough is enough, not doing more than is needed, but how do you know what's needed? By going within. It's really called not doing. Not really doing anything. You're just allowing yourself to move along with the flow of nature. And in that way, you are not doing anything. And another way of looking at that is you're just observing yourself. You become the awareness. You let go of the Zweifel and become Einful, oneful instead. So I just wanted to share with you a couple of things he says, and he has a certain style of writing, so it's not always the easiest on the ear, but I'll try. So he says that the goal is to break the continuity of this intellectual emotional complex that causes all these thoughts that drag us away from just moving with nature. It says, break that and its dominance will cease. And what is produced when you break that continuity, so when you let go of the thoughts, instead of reaching for the pie, you just come back and observe the desire to take on more work or try harder or run faster or whatever it is you're doing. You just observe it. And in that observance, he says this is called a shift in context. And later he mentions that the whole of the Tao Te Ching, because he studied the Tao Te Ching a lot, Red Hawk, is about a shift in context, from shifting yourself from duality to this moving with the Tao, which is oneness, which is everything, which is that which cannot be spoken about. So I can't really speak about it, but it's more of an experience of being with the Tao. He says, when I do this, I no longer operate from an agreed-on definition of reality, but I react from reality itself. I operate from what is exactly as it is, not from meaning supplied by the intellectual emotional complex. This entails an acceptance of reality without desire to change anything, and it entails non-interference with what is. I take my cues from direct experience of reality in the moment, not from memory or the past projected forward, which is called the future. I live in the unknown, in organic ignorance, which is intelligent because it is in direct contact with the source of wisdom without the interference of memory. So I'm just going to read a bit more because he moves on to what does come from spirit. He talks about intuition and inspiration. But memory, he says, is useful for remembering. And so you don't abandon it, it just finds its own place. So it stops being the master and becomes what it was designed to be, which is like a servant to you, a servant to being. And being, he says, emerges as the active principle only when it ceases identifying with this intellectual emotional complex. His words are a bit tough. So he says, at that point, when the memory thinks, there is not inner movement towards away from the thought. This movement towards away from thought is identification. So what he's saying is that memory might arise, but you don't identify with this memory. It's just there as a useful guide in your being, in the Tao, in nature. He says there is a steady equilibrium, a stillness, an absence of movement when the thought arises. In the shamanic tradition, remember at the beginning I mentioned how the Tao was born out of the shamanic tradition. This cessation of movement towards or away from thought is called not doing. And this is what Wu Wei is, that the thoughts can come and go, but you aren't identified with them. You just keep in this moving with the Tao. And in that moment, you are observing. You're obviously observing the thoughts, but you are staying very solid. He says this cessation of movement sends a direct signal to the creator. It is called in ancient traditions the invitation. I just love this. So when you move into this place of not identifying with your thoughts, not being dragged away, not being, in this place of just allowing the flow, it is called an invitation to the creator. What enters only upon invitation is a flow of information from higher centers, which are the source of wisdom. So conscience, he says, is the emotional center transformed into feeling. And what he says is what we receive in this moment, the invitation that opens up to the creator, allows to flow through us two things, intuition and inspiration. He says intuition is a fundamentally different form of thinking. It sees everything at once, the whole of a situation, its past, its present, and future. Thus, it is able to inform in a way which includes the unknown, whereas memory can only act from the known. And that's the limitation of thought. Intuition operates on a different scale and from a different context. It is this shift in context. Once you move into the Tao, when you hear about people who are in the flow and therefore, they move through life with ease and things turn up and they go somewhere and exactly what they needed or arose there. So they're moving in this Tao place, and this place of oneness where intuition comes in from the creator. And then also does inspiration. Inspiration is a fundamentally different form of feeling. So intuition is not thinking, but one might think it's thinking. And inspiration is not emotion, but it's like the feelings. They're like two parts. If you think of The mind and the heart in their purest form. The mind would be the intuition and the heart would be the inspiration. This distinction is important to understand. Emotions are limited, like thoughts are limited, because their function is about measuring danger. They measure, the anger, sadness, happiness, fear. They are all housed in the emotional center. And inspiration has nothing to do with that, it's a feeling. I don't want to read all of this because it's a bit long, but he says they are capable of supplying information that's totally inaccessible to thought and impossible for thought to access. It's a common story throughout human history that great inventions, insights, and discoveries happen in a flash of inspiration. At such moments, women and men were able to see the whole picture clearly, and it usually comes in the form of an image or a picture. Thus, Crick saw two snakes intertwined and intuited the double helix of DNA, and Einstein saw himself traveling on a rocket ship at the speed of alongside of light, and he intuited the general theory of relativity, which blows my mind. I didn't know that about Einstein, that that's how he came to the theory of relativity from this vision he had in that place. Then he says, once there is a shift in context within, the function of the mind is really just to like translate what it receives from intuition and inspiration into languages that can be shared with others. So he points out that, the Tao Te Ching, the Bhagavad Gita, the Dhammapada, the writers of the Gospels, they received that wisdom from intuition and inspiration, and then the emotional intellectual complex comes together to help that be translated into words for others. And it's reminded by the Tao. Those words are really can only be a pointer. It's a direct experience of the Tao that we're looking for, because the Tao can never be put into words, because inspiration and intuition can't really be put into words. The minute they do, they've been filtered through the mind. So anyway, I'll stop there on the Red Hawk, talking about this non-doing. Just because I thought it was kind of interesting, some of the things he's saying there. And he says that this whole not doing is just in line with the Tao Te Ching's essence of Wu Wei. Okay, there's something else I was going to say. No, all right, I'll just pause here. And that was it. So, Red Hawk, he's a Native American, he's like a shamanic spiritual teacher. He also translates the Tao. So I'll just read you how he translated this particular verse, as it's very different. Well, sort of different. To carry an empty cup is easier than one filled to the brim, but an empty cup feeds and nourishes no one. So he gives the opposite as well. So for him, this verse is more about finding the balance. The sharper the knife, the easier it is to dull, but a dull knife cuts nothing. The more wealth you possess, the harder it is to protect, but a hungry mouth is an angry mouth. Pride brings its own trouble, but lack of pride is its reflection. Do not shun your gifts. Accomplish your goals with the gifts you acquire, then simply walk away. Possess, but do not covet. This is the red road that leads from time to eternity, and from eternity to the center of all things. When we talk about eternity, sometimes we think about eternity in terms of time. But what I was thinking about this week was that eternity means no time. It is where the non-doing happens, because, doing has to happen with time, but non-doing, you stop time. And for shamans, it's called when you move into this place of watching awareness or self-observation, it's actually referred to as stopping time. And the Taoists sometimes call it that as well, stopping time. When you move into the Tao, you stop time, because eternity is no time. There is no time. Sometimes we think of eternity as time forever, but it's not. It's not when it comes to the Tao. So I thought to end, as I, Unless anyone's got anything they wanted to share. I would just read from The Tao of Pooh Bear by Benjamin Hoff. There is a very sweet chapter within it that talks about Wu Wei from the perspective of Winnie the Pooh. And if you haven't, there are a lot of the Tao of Winnie the Pooh and gems from Winnie the Pooh, and it says that Pooh Bear represents the Tao. Because it's very sweet. Now we come to what could be called the most characteristic element of Taoism in action. In Chinese, it is known as Wu Wei. It is also the most characteristic element of Pooh Bear in action. In English, it is not known as much of anything in particular. We believe that it's time that someone noticed it and called it something, so we're going to call it the Pooh Wei. Literally, Wu Wei means without doing, causing, or making, but practically speaking, it means without meddlesome, combative, or egotistical effort. It seems rather significant that the character Wei developed from the symbols for a clawing hand and a monkey, since the term Wu Wei means no going against the nature of things, no clever tampering, no monkeying around. The efficiency of Wu Wei is like that of water flowing over and around the rocks in its path, not the mechanical straight line approach that usually ends up short-circuiting natural laws, but one that evolves from an inner sensitivity to the natural rhythm of things. Let's take an example from the writing of Chuang Tse. At the Gorge of Lu, the great waterfall plunges for thousands of feet, its spray visible for miles. In the churning waters below, no living creature can be seen. One day, Kung Fu Tse was standing at a distance from the pool's edge when he saw an old man being tossed about in the turbulent water. He called to his disciples and together they ran to rescue the victim. But by the time they reached the water, the old man had climbed out onto the bank and was walking along singing to himself. Kung Fu Tse hurried up to him. "You would have to be a ghost to survive that," he said. "But you seem to be a man instead. What secret power do you have?" "Nothing special," the old man replied. "I began to learn while I was very young and grew up practicing it. Now I am certain of success. I go down with the water and I come up with the water. I follow it and forget myself. I survive because I don't struggle against the water's superior power. That's all." And this reminds me of that joke. Have you ever heard this? I used to work as a trampolinist. It had its ups and downs. I don't know if you ever heard that. I'm not very good at delivering jokes, but it reminded me of that. Just sort of moving up, going down, moving along with the flow. When we learn to work with our own inner nature and with the natural laws operating around us, we reach the level of Wu Wei. Then we work with the natural order of things and operate on the principle of minimal effort. Since the natural world follows that principle, it does not make mistakes. Mistakes are imagined by man, the creature with the overloaded brain who separates himself from the supporting network of natural laws by interfering and trying too hard. Not like Pooh, the most effortless bear we've ever seen. "Just how do you do it, Pooh?" "Do what?" asked Pooh. "Become so effortless." "I don't do much of anything," he said. "But all those things of yours get done." "Well, they just sort of happen," he said. "Wait a minute. That reminds me of something from the Tao Te Ching," I said, reaching for a book. "Here it is, chapter 37. Translated, it reads something like, 'Tao does not do, but nothing is not done.'" "That sounds like a riddle," said Pooh. "It means that Tao doesn't force or interfere with things, but lets them work in their own way to produce results naturally. Then whatever needs to be done is done." "I see," said Pooh. "In Chinese, the principle would be wei wu wei, do without doing. From wei wu wei comes zu jian, self-so. That means that things happen by themselves spontaneously." "Oh, I see," said Pooh. For a basic example of the Pooh Wei, let's recall something that happened in the house at Pooh Corner when Pooh, Piglet, Rabbit, and Roo were playing Pooh Sticks. They dropped their sticks off the bridge into the river and had gone to the other side to see whose stick would come out first. And they'd been waiting quite a while when out from under the bridge floated Eeyore. I didn't know you were playing, said Roo. I'm not, said Eeyore. Eeyore, what are you doing there, said Rabbit. I'll give you three guesses, Rabbit. Digging holes? Wrong. Leaping from branch to branch? Wrong. Waiting for someone to help me get out of the river? Right. Give Rabbit time, he always gets the answer. Then Pooh got an idea. They would drop some stones in the river, and the stones would make waves, and the waves would wash Eeyore over to the river bank. Rabbit thought it was a good idea. Eeyore did not. Suppose we hit him by mistake, said Piglet. Or suppose you miss him by mistake, said Eeyore. Think of all the possibilities, Piglet, before you settle down and enjoy yourself. Pooh is sort of seen as the worrier. At the beginning of the Tao of Pooh, it talks about the elements that each of the characters represent in Taoism. But Pooh has got the biggest stone he could carry and was leaning over the bridge, holding it in his paws. I'm not throwing it, I'm just going to drop it, Eeyore, he explained. And then I can't miss. I mean, then I can't hit you. No, said Eeyore. I like spinning around, so I'm going to carry on doing that, even if it confuses you. Rabbit began to feel it was time he took command. Now, Pooh, said Rabbit, when I say now, you drop it. Eeyore, when I say now, Pooh's going to drop his stone. Thank you, Rabbit, but I expect I shall know. Are you ready, Pooh? Piglet, give Pooh a little more room. Get back a bit there. Is everyone ready? No, said Eeyore. Now, said Rabbit. Pooh dropped his stone. There was a loud splash, and Eeyore disappeared. It was an anxious moment for the watchers on the bridge. They looked and looked, and even the sight of Piglet's stick coming out a little in front of Rabbit's didn't cheer them up much, as you would maybe have expected. And then, just as Pooh was beginning to think that he must have chosen the wrong stone, or the wrong river, or the wrong day for his bright idea, something grey showed for a moment by the river bank. And it got slowly bigger and bigger, and at last it was Eeyore coming out. With a shout, they rushed off the bridge and pulled and pushed at him, and soon he was standing among them on dry land. Oh, Eeyore, you are wet, said Piglet. Eeyore shook himself and asked somebody to explain to Piglet what happens when you've been inside a river for quite some time. Well done, Pooh, said Rabbit kindly. That was a good idea of ours. Cleverness, as usual, takes all the credit it possibly can. But it is not the clever mind that's responsible when things work out. It's the mind that sees what is in front of it and follows the nature of things. And this comes back to what Red Hawk was saying, that the inspiration and the intuition is what sort of will have the best outcome, shall we say. When you work with Wu Wei, you put the round peg in the round hole and the square peg in the square hole. There is no stress and there is no struggle. Egotistical desire tries to force the round peg into the square hole and the square peg into the round hole. Cleverness tries to devise craftier ways of making pegs fit where they don't belong. Knowledge tries to figure out why round pegs fit round holes, but not square holes. I love this. Wu Wei, however, doesn't try. It isn't about knowledge or desire or need to be thought clever. It doesn't think about it, it just does. And when it doesn't appear to do much of anything, but things get done. Okay, I think I'll stop there. It's about sort of halfway through the chapter on Wu Wei, but there are many, many verses on Wu Wei in the Tao Te Ching, so we can always come back to Pooh Bear later. It's just a fun way of looking at the Tao through Pooh Bear. Who knew that all those years we may have read about him or watched him, that he was really a teacher of the Tao, a teacher of Lao Tzu. Yeah, before I wrap up, does anyone want to share anything? I don't have to. Just wanted to give you the chance. So, and that's it for today on Wu Wei and enough is enough and finding the balance and listening to the voice within. Yeah, I thought the Pooh Bear stuff is kind of cute and a bit different. So I'm here next week, and then I'm actually on vacation for 3 weeks, but I'm going to see if maybe someone else might be interested in going through the Tao those weeks. If not, then we'll have some audios I'll pick out. But I'm here next week as we do verse 10. So thank you very much. I'm going to end with a song. It's quite a short song, so I don't know if that will allow you, Cheryl, to do announcements. Did I record this? Says Charge Prince Arjuna. Yes, Cheryl has recorded it, and I believe it goes up on awakeningtogether.org this evening, and you can find it. Sanctuary Highlights is it's audio Sanctuary Highlights, Eastern Wisdom with Helen, I think, and then it will be there. It's, look out for verse 9. Great. So thank you. I hope you have a lovely week. Many blessings to you. I hope you move with the Tao. And I just thought I'd play this very short song. It's just 2 minutes, but it's very sweet by my favourite Audrey Assad. I have been listening to Tupac all day, but didn't think Tupac was appropriate by day. Okay, so where? It. Here we go.
Jesus, make us like you, make us humble like you.
That is the wrong song. That is a very long song, so I will not be playing that song. Sorry. The minute she said Jesus, I thought this doesn't sound right. Sorry about that. Short and sweet. I haven't heard the version of the young boy that sings that. I would love to hear that. So thank you very much. And over to you, Cheryl, and on to Doreen. Thank you.